So last week we have stopped at chapter 11 verse 31. Now, in Vedanta, there are described 7 levels of consciousness. All of us have these 7 levels of consciousness. I've written that down on the board here. And what are these 7 levels of consciousness? What do they pertain to? When any of us, or rather most of us, are engrossed in chasing after worldly or sensual desires, we are only interested. The primary objective of our life is to chase after material and sensual desires. Then our consciousness, the mind, the level of the consciousness in the mind is said to be at the 3 lower levels, which are called the Muladhara Chakra, the Swadhisthana Chakra, and the Manipura Chakra. These 3 chakras in our body are represented from the where our organs of reproduction, organs of excretion, and up to the navel. So that consciousness is only at that lower level, which is represented by all these organs. That means our interest is only in sensual and material things. But as we go on, supposing we rise in our level of spirituality and we come to a higher level where we begin to question, what is the purpose of this life? What is the purpose of human life? Has it only been given to us, this human body, to pursue sensual and material pleasures? When we start to question, is there something beyond this? Who is God? What is God? Where is God? When such thoughts come into our mind, then our level of consciousness is said to have risen above the Manipura Chakra, and it comes up to the Anahata Chakra, which is corresponding to our heart. That means there is some spiritual awakening in us. We start asking questions. We want to investigate further about spirituality, about God. There is a thirst in us. And if you keep on progressing again more and more on the Anahata, when you are at the Anahata level, you will then come to the Vishuddha level, which is at the throat. That is where your consciousness is, Vishuddha level. At Vishuddha level, what is the marks of a person whose consciousness is at the Vishuddha level? Such a person, when he hears any spiritual discourses, when he or she hears bhajans, when he or she hears mantras being chanted, anything to do with God, the devotee's mind is in ecstasy. The devotee's mind is at pure supreme bliss. The devotee can experience that supreme bliss, that level of bliss, just by hearing the names of Lord. So, such a devotee, in fact, in Ramakrishna Paramahansa book called the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, he gives 3 signs of a true devotee. Who is a true devotee of God? He must have this 3 characteristics in him or her. What are the characteristics? 1, when he hears anything about God, his mind goes into a level of ecstasy, into a level of peace. Anything he hears about God, whether it's a bhajan, whether it's a spiritual talk, whether it's a mantra being chanted, the devotee's mind automatically gets into a state of peace. That is the first sign. That means you are a true devotee of God. Second is, whatever is heard is assimilated. The knowledge is absorbed. That means you don't just listen, you absorb the knowledge and you are able to apply it in your life. That is the second mark of a true devotee. He listens, he absorbs, and he applies that knowledge in his life. And the third quality of a true devotee is that he or she is a master of the senses. The senses do not rule your life. Your mind is in total control of your senses. So, when you say total control of the senses, meaning what? Meaning one stays in the present. One surrenders the future and the past to the Lord. In fact, there is a saying, you know, that why are men, some men bald in the front? Some men are bald behind. Do you know why? Have you ever wondered why? The ones who are bald in the front are always thinking about the future. That's why they are bald in the front. And the ones who are bald behind are thinking about the past. That's why you never see anyone bald by the side. Because nobody stays in the present. The mind is always wandering to the future and to the past. It's a joke, huh? Don't take it seriously. Don't go back and then tell your husband, you know, you are thinking about the past or thinking.
But if you're born from the front and back,
that means you're thinking about the future and the past. But never in the present.
Yeah,
never.
There should be something about women also.
See, women have cool set of hands, so I don't know what that means. So it's a joke, huh? Don't take it. So what I was saying, okay, so such are the marks of a devotee where the level of consciousness has risen to the Vishuddha or the throat level. Then if you proceed further along this path of spirituality or divinity, then you will come to the what we call the sixth level, which is in between the eyebrows, called the Ajna Chakra, A-J-N-E, Ajna Chakra, which means now the level of consciousness has reached up to the level in between the eyebrows, which is commonly called the third eye. At this level, what happens? If you have managed to reach this level, where you have raised the level of consciousness to the point of the Ajna Chakra, you will be actually able to see God. You will be able to experience, you can actually see God, just how like the great saints and sages were able to see God with the third eye. And finally, the final and seventh level is when we reach the top of the crown, which is called the Sahasrara Chakra. At that point, the devotee and the Lord merge as one. That's why in chapter 8 Krishna said, when someone has reached that level, at the point of death, all you have to do is utter the sound of Om and you will be one with God upon them. So that devotee has already reached that height, that level already. So thus there are the seven chakras which we go through. And all of these chakras are dependent on the mind. The whole concept of spirituality works around the mind. The mind is at which level of consciousness. So we should know now by our attitude, by our characteristic, what level is our consciousness at. Thus the sages and saints also have studied the mind and they have told us in the Upanishads that the mind is made actually of four components. Our mind is not just one mind. It has got four aspects. And we should understand this very clearly because we operate, all the actions that we do, all the desires that we have, all come from the mind. The mind is the very center of all our actions. And what are the four components of the mind? The first is called the manas, M-A-N-A-S, manas. What is manas? Manas is our emotional mind that gives in to likes and dislikes. So example, if you are supposed to get up early in the morning to go for exercise, but it is a nice cold day, there's a warm, nice blanket there, and then what do? If you listen to the manas says, I like to sleep, and then you go back to sleep. That means what? We are operating from the point of the manas, the emotional mind, which gives in to likes and dislikes. Then there is another part of our mind, which is called the buddhi, the intellect. The intellect is the one that guides us to right or wrong. So Is it right or wrong to exercise? It's right to exercise. But if we don't get up in the morning to exercise, which means, which are we following? The dictates of the manas or the buddhi? The manas. So there is a constant battle always within us between this manas and the buddhi. What is right or wrong? Do I do that or do I do what I like and I avoid what I dislike? And then there is a third factor which controls our mind and our actions. And that is called ahankar or ego. The ego also comes out and makes its own play. So the ego can either follow manas or the ego can be either controlled by your intellect. And then there is a fourth factor which is called the chitta, C-H-I-T-T-A, which is the memory bank. All your past experiences, all your past actions are recorded in this chitta. Therefore, your mind now has got four parts controlling it. Now imagine, if somebody calls you a donkey, right? So now, we have two more sets of equipment we must understand. One is called the jnana indriyas. Jnana means knowledge. Indriyas means senses. So we have five jnana indriyas which bring perception of the whole world to us. Whatever we perceive in the world, whatever knowledge we get from the world is given to us or accessed to us through these five organs of knowledge, jnana indriyas. And they are the eyes, the ears, the nose, the skin, and the tongue. Therefore, all my experiences of seeing, touching, tasting, etc., whatever experiences I gather is through these five organs. That's why in the Upanishads they are called jnana indriyas. And where do they bring the experience to? To the mind. So they bring it to the mind, and what does the mind do? It processes these experiences. And depending on the quality of your mind, whether it is sattvic, rajasic or tamasic, you will respond back to the world. So when you respond back, you have five what we call organs also to respond. They are called karma indriyas. Karma means action, indriyas means what we call senses or organs, organs of action. Thus you have five organs bringing you knowledge and experience, process in the mind, then the mind needs to act back. It uses the five organs of action, karma indriyas. What are they? Hands, legs, vocal cords, the organ of speech, organ of reproduction, organ of excretion. They are the five ways how we respond back to the world. So simple example, if somebody calls you a donkey, what receives that stimuli is the ear. The ear receives the stimuli and it goes to the mind. Now, if the mind is sattvic, how does it respond?
Ignore.
Maybe you just smile, just say thank you very much and walk away. Right? Sattvic mind. So how did you respond back? You just smile and you walk away. If your mind is rajasic, how do you respond?
Thank you.
You will call him a cockroach or a rat or whatever it is. That means you use your vocal cords, your karma indriyas to respond back. Right? So receive through the ear, jnana indriya, process in the mind, rajasic mind, respond back through the vocal cords, call you a cockroach. If you are tamasic mind, so you respond with the hand, you whack the blood. So this is how the sages and saints analyze. That stimuli comes in, processed by the mind and respond back. And it depends on the quality of your mind. So why we need to understand these seven levels or seven planes of consciousness? Because it relates to this chapter 11, especially the verses we are going to understand today. Initially, Arjuna requested Lord Krishna to give me this divine vision, Divya Chakshu, divine vision. And Lord Krishna obliged by raising Arjuna's level of consciousness to which level? To which level? Ajna, right? To Ajna level, the third eye level. And how did he do that? He removed all the impurities from his mind. Ego, lust, greed, envy, jealousy, desire, everything removed. When all that is removed, then the level of consciousness moves up to the level between the eyebrows, which is when we are able to see God, right? But we must understand that for all of us to reach this level, what we must do? How do we remove the impurities? Various sadhanas we have to do. It may take a number of years, a number of lifetimes to finally reach that level of that Ajna Chakra. But for Arjuna, it was a split instant because of the blessings of the Lord. So what is the difference? The difference is the Lord only gave Arjuna a temporary blessing so that he could see this Vishwarupa. He could experience the Vishwarupa. But the blessing was only temporary because it was not by his own efforts. So that blessing won't last very long. And the purpose also for Arjuna to see so that he could describe it, and it is also for our benefit also. We could understand what is this Vishwarupa. So when Arjuna was first blessed with the Vishwarupa, from verses 15 onwards up to 31, he was describing this whole Vishwarupa from verses 15 to 31. And he went through two different phases of emotions. When Krishna blessed him with this Vishwarupa, he was at the highest level of consciousness. Now understand, he did not go up to the Sahasra. So he did not actually merge with God. He only could see God. And what did he experience? What did he experience the first time when he saw, when he had this vision of Vishwarupa? Wonderment, Vishmaya, amazement. To see things that no other human has seen before. To see everything in this universe. He saw the devas, he saw everything. He saw the, what we call the vasus, he saw Indriya, everything he saw. Indra, everything he saw. Imagine that whole vision that came in front of him. So many wondrous things, the planets, the sun, the stars, everything he could see. So he felt so amazed at the whole vision. But as this blessing began to wear off, then slowly came in the fear. Why fear? Because then he saw the other aspect of creation. The other aspect of creation is the aspect of destruction. And how did he see this destruction? He saw the mouth of Lord, represented by the mouth of Lord, which is called the Kala Tattvam, or the agent of destruction. And he saw that all the warriors who were on the battlefield, they were all flying into the mouth of the Lord. And he was chewing them up nicely, in between the teeth. Some were being chewed like vegetables, some were swallowed like rasam. What is the difference? One is quick death, being chewed and chewed, meaning some soldiers, because of their karma, they had to suffer, suffer, suffer and die slowly. Some soldiers, because of their good karmas, were immediately just swallowed up, which means quick death. And then he explained what Arjuna also explained, that he saw some of the deaths. He gave us a metaphor. He said some are like the rivers rushing towards the ocean. One type of death. Another type of death he described are like the moths flying towards the fire, into the light. So the two types of death describe what? One type of death is those who die, and just like the rivers flow into the ocean, then they evaporate and they come back through the rain. Meaning some people will be incarnated again because they have karmas to fulfill. So that rivers flowing into the ocean describes one type of death, where those people have not finished their karmas, they have to come back again. And the other type, where the moths are flying into the fire, which they are totally destroyed by the fire, indicates the other type of death where one goes and does not come back. So this is the destruction that Arjuna saw and was describing. And then in the last verse that we have discussed, now Arjuna has got that fear, the fear factor, which went on from verses 15 to 22 were the feeling of amazement. Then from verses 23 up to 31, he had this feeling of bhayam, of fear, when he saw this mass destruction. So because his blessing was slowly going down, he could not understand. Like all of us, we think that Lord is kind, Lord is compassionate, God is loving. When everything is going smoothly, we thank the Lord for everything. We say, "You're wonderful, Lord. What a beautiful life you've given me. Wonderful family, health, money, everything is there." The minute when we face adverse situations in life, then we ask, "Lord, how can you be a compassionate, loving one? If you are, then why are you punishing me?" Right? We fail to understand. We find it difficult to understand. This God who's supposed to be loving, compassionate, can also bring destruction and adverse situations into our life. And this is what Arjuna questions the Lord in verse number 31. That who are you actually? Are you the loving, compassionate one? Or are you the terrible, destroying one? Can you tell me who you are in reality? And thus, from today's verse 32 now, Krishna will give him the answer. So now what does he say in verse 32? Verse 32 he says, okay. Now he answers him in verse 32. He says, "Asmi, I am Pravarda." Pravarda, you can see in the first line, "Asmi Pravarda." Pravada means I am the mighty one. Mighty one what? Kala, I am death. I am mighty death. I am the great controller of death. So that is, especially in this battlefield, Lord says, my role here is today is to play the role of death, to destroy all these various warriors. So that is what you are seeing. All these warriors who are going into my mouth, being destroyed. Today on this battlefield, I am playing the role of death. And thus we have to understand this clearly. Now, it is said in our scriptures that there are two levels of reality. One, I have written here on the board, is called Vyavaharika Satyam. Vyavaharika Satyam is at that level where we are now, where there is duality. Okay? What is the duality? There is Jiva, there is the world, and there is God. So there is duality. There are individual components here. Okay? And what is the other reality? Paramatika Satyam. Where at that higher level, there is no duality. There is only what we call non-duality. There is only one. There is God and nothing else. That is called Paramarthika Satyam. In that, there is no creation, there is no dissolution. In the Vyavaharika Satyam, there is growth, there is birth, there is death. So now, what is the difference between the two? One is permanent. The higher one is permanent, Paramarthika Satyam. The lower one is non-permanent, is constantly changing. And there is a beautiful dialogue in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad between sage Yajnavalkya, it's a great sage who's mentioned in Upanishads, and he is discussing with his wife Maitri. So she is questioning him and he is giving her some knowledge. And what is the discussion about? It is about the very nature of this entire creation. So what does he say? He says, "Yatra hi dvaitam eva bhavati." Dvaita means duality. Wherever there is duality, what is the sign of duality? Tat itara itram jigrati. That itara, itara jigrati means when duality is present. Jigrati means then you can smell the fragrance. Why? Because there are two components. There is the subject, there is the object. In duality there is subject and object. So I can smell, number one. Number two, tat itara itaram pashyati. Then I can speak to another person. Duality. So I can smell, I can speak. What else? I can also listen to others. Tat itara itaram srunoti. So wherever there is duality, you can listen, you can speak, you can smell, you can experience the other object. But he says, when you come to the higher reality, yatra tvasya sarvam atma vibhuti, when there is only one, there is only atma, then he says, what is there to speak to who? Who is there to listen to? Because why? There is only one. There is no subject, object, there is only subject. That's it. So this is what it refers to, the Vyavaharika Satyam state where there is duality, Paramarthika Satyam where there is only one. So at this level we worship God, at the higher level everything is only one. Now what does it mean to us? Vedanta says there are two realities. Knowing there are two realities, it is up to you. Either you accept. Now, at the Vyavaharika Satyam, where there is growth, there is death, there is gain, there is loss, there is health, there is disease, you have two choices. Either you accept and live happily in this world, accept both, or what is your other choice? If you resist, then you go through the trials and tribulation. You can't accept this, you can't accept that. But if you can accept, either you accept or you reject everything. That means you take sannyas, you go off, you leave the world alone. I don't care about the world. I leave the world, I reject the world, I go off and take sannyas. If you want to live in the world, what you must do? Learn to accept. Right? So, there was one small story given. A man used to fly every time by international airlines, you know, business class, first class, you know. So when you go international airline, full service airline, when you go in, what do you have? You have choice, isn't it? Sir, do you want fish? Do you want chicken? Do you want veg? Do you want non-veg? When it comes to drinks, you want orange juice, apple juice, so much of variety is there, right? You have choice. So one day this man was flying budget airline, he had no choice. Flying budget airline. Budget airline means what? No choice. So the stewardess came and gave him, here, take, this is the meal. He asked the stewardess, do I have a choice? She said, yes, you have a choice. He said, what is the choice? Either you eat or you don't eat. You have a choice. So yes or no. That means what? When we live in the world, we have a choice. Either we accept duality or we reject it totally. If you want to live in the world as a householder, then you accept duality. Or you become sannyasi, you reject everything and you go off. You don't face anything at all. So yes, we have a choice. So exactly now, what is Arjuna's problem? Arjuna's problem is he cannot accept. He can accept the wonderment part of Lord, he cannot accept the destroying part of Lord. Right? Now, if you want to accept, you want to live in the world and accept, what do you need? Supposing you say, okay, I accept everything. I accept there is birth, there is death, there is loss, there is profit. I want to accept. What do I need? What do I require? There are friends, there are enemies. Everything is there in the world. I must learn to accept. What do I need? Steady mind, inner strength. You need that inner strength, isn't it? And if you reject everything, what do you need? You also need inner strength also, right? To accept, I must have inner strength. To reject also, I must have inner strength. But to Arjuna, because his what we call his Divya Chakshu was only a blessing by Lord, so he did not really have that inner strength. So therefore, he could not face this fearful, destructive nature of the Lord. And thus, now Lord says, in this verse 32. So, 32, we are still on 32. Look at the second line. Iha. The word Iha means right here, right now, on the battlefield. What is the prominent job of the Lord? What is going to happen on the battlefield? People are going to die. So, what is the prominent job of the Lord? He says, Sayakrit. I am the destructive principle. Right now, here on this battlefield, my role is to play the destructive principle. Loka means this battlefield is identified here, Iha Loka, in this battlefield, I am playing the destructive principle, Kala Tatvam. And who will I destroy? I will destroy everybody, Bhishma Pita, Duryodhana, Karna, everybody. And thus he says, now I have activated Pravartha, I have activated, why? This death principle, because billions and how many soldiers are there on the battlefield? Almost 3 million soldiers. I have to kill millions and millions of soldiers here. So I have activated this Kala Tatvam. Meaning what? The mouth of the Lord is going to be busy eating away, right? Enjoying all the delicacies. So he says now, Sama Arthu, I am devouring, I am going to eat everything. Meaning what? The death principle is activated on a mass scale. That's why sometimes we see destruction happening in different parts of the world where thousands of people die in earthquakes, cyclone, disasters, tsunamis, etc. Meaning what? The destructive principle has now been activated to on a mass scale. Not just one or two, but thousands of people. And this is what is happening now on the battlefield. Now, comes a very interesting thought in Arjuna's mind. When Lord tells him, I am on this battlefield, I am the death principle, I am going to destroy masses. Now what do you think is a thought in Arjuna's mind? What do you think is the most natural thought in Arjuna's mind? When God tells him, I am the destroying principle on this battlefield. He's already seen that. Remember, in the earlier verses, he saw who's going to be destroyed also. And he knows he's not going to be destroyed. So what do you think now is running through his mind?
Why should so many be destroyed?
What else? Yeah, he cannot understand, he cannot take this. But now Lord tells him, I am, yes, I am that destructive principle. And right now my role is to play that destructive principle. I am also the creator, I am the preserver, I am also the destroyer. Right now I have to play the destroying role here on the battlefield. So that's why you are seeing all these warriors. But Arjuna is asking or thinking,
what is my role?
Huh?
What is my role?
What happens if I decide to run away? I told you I don't want to fight. I'm going to throw my bow and arrow down and run. Now you tell me how you're going to destroy these people. If I don't shoot the arrow, how are you going to destroy it? Isn't it? So he's thinking this, and Lord must have seen, because Lord can of course read the mind. So Arjuna must be thinking, hey, if I have already thrown down my bow and arrow, I'm not going to kill anybody. I already told Krishna, I'm not going to shoot Bhishma, I'm not going to shoot Drona. I'm not going to shoot all these people, I'm going to leave the battlefield, become a sannyasi. Then tell me how you can destroy, come, tell me, you're so great, how you can destroy. So what does Lord say now? Rite api tvam, even without you Arjuna, I don't need you, even without you also, sarve na bhavishyanti. Sarve means all these warriors, on both sides of the army, na bhavishyanti, they will cease to exist. They do not have any more existence already. And Arjuna is seeing that also. So it does not matter, he says now, whether you find it proper to kill or improper to kill, whether you stay on the battlefield, whether you go off. Even if you go off, these warriors will all die. He says, all this ocean of Yodaha, Yodaha means all this ocean of warriors, ye avashtita, who are arrayed on both sides, Pratyani Keshu, in the opposing armies who are facing each other, whether it's the Pandavas or whether it's the Kauravas, they are going to die on a mass scale. And how many people survive out of 3 million people? 10. 7 on the Pandavas, which were 5 Pandava brothers, Lord Krishna, Satyaki, Yuyutsu, 5, 6, Satyaki, Yuyutsu, and there are one or two others, I can't remember the name. So, there are on the Pandava side, 7, correct. We have 7, right? 5 Pandava brothers, Krishna, Satyaki, and Yuyutsu. Yuyutsu is the only son of the blind king Dhritarashtra, who left the Kauravas and he went over to the Pandava side because he did not agree to what the Kauravas were doing. And later Yuyutsu was crowned as the king of Indraprastha. The Pandavas left the whole kingdom to him. So these 7 people survived. On the Kaurava side, 3 people survived. Kritavarma, Kripacharya. Kripacharya was the guru of both the Pandavas and the Kauravas. And Ashvatthama, who was the son of Dronacharya, was the other guru of Pandavas and Kauravas. So total 10. Now think, although the Pandavas stood for Dharma, the Pandava side, they were also going to be destroyed. The Kauravas stood for Adharma, we can understand they are destroyed. But even the Pandavas who stood for Dharma also, they also are going to be destroyed. This is what Lord Krishna is telling. Now, so what he is trying to tell Arjuna, don't take pride in yourself. Don't think that you walk away from here that I am not going to kill all these people. Don't think you are the one, without you I can also kill all these people. I don't really need you. Because if you recall in chapter 1 verse 22, when ego came into Arjuna, what did he tell Krishna? When Krishna was taking his chariot, this sense of ego came into him. If we see chapter 1 verse 22 page 11, this is the first downfall of Arjuna. When he commanded Lord Krishna, take my chariot in between the two armies, for what reason? So that I can carefully observe the warriors, I, ego, desirous of war, and whom I have to fight. As though all the other soldiers were nobody. He is telling, I have to fight, I want to see who I have to fight. That means he is thinking that he is the main, what we call the main fighting person. So that ego is crept in into him. And that is the first sign of his downfall there. So now, Krishna is telling Arjuna that without, with or without you, I am going to destroy all these warriors. Now, knowing that without you also they are going to die, then what should Arjuna do now? He must be wondering. If I stay, I will kill the warriors. If I run away, also Lord is going to kill the warriors. So now what should I do? So then Krishna gives him the answer that whether you get involved in this battle or not, the time has come for these warriors all to perish. However, if you choose to fight in this war, what is Arjuna's advantage? Victory you will get, your kingdom you will get back, name and fame you will also get, right? Krishna is saying, I am going to kill the warriors, but you will get the name and fame. Because Lord doesn't want the name and fame. You do the work, you take the name and fame. Lord is doing the work, but you can take the name and fame. So, Dharma will be established. So Arjuna has all the benefit of fighting. If Arjuna runs away from the war, what will happen? You will get a bad name. People will criticize you. People will pour shame on your name. People will say you are a coward. And worse still, what is the worst than that? By running away from the battle. Huh? When you don't do your dharmic duty, what is the worst case scenario? You go to Naraka, you go to hell. When you abandon your duty, when you don't do your duty, you will get punishment in hell. So there is so much of adverse situation if you don't fight. So now what is better? So he says, Tasmat, verse number 33. He says, Tasmat, therefore, since the time has come for me to finish all these warriors from the face of the earth, Tvam Utishta, may you arise, Arjuna. And this word Utishta is a very beautiful word which is used in the Upanishads constantly. Jagrat Utishta. Jagrat Utishta. The master keeps on telling the student, Jagrat, awake. You are sleeping, awake. I don't know how many of you are sleeping, but please awake. Jagrat. And then, some of what? Utishta, stand up. So, what are they trying to tell us? Awake to what? We are not sleeping. Awake to what? Awake to your real self. Awake to your real self. We are now in a state of ignorance. Sleep means state of ignorance. So the teacher keeps on saying, in the Upanishads you will find this word, Jagrat Utishta, Jagrat Utishta. Awake to your real self, Utishta, arise and do your duty. Take care of your responsibilities and your duties. With what? With the right attitude. So two things very important, Jagrat, awake, realize your true self, Utishta, take up all the weapons of your life and do all your duties and responsibilities. Don't abandon your duties and responsibilities.
So, but at the same time, he's saying, Krishna is saying that it's the death, it's kind of his destiny.
Right.
It's going to happen.
Right, right.
So then what is the...
I'm coming to that. That's the exciting part. I'm coming to that. But that's in this verse. Okay? So, play your rightful role in this battle. Okay, may you rise and do your duty. How will you do your duty? He says, Jitva Shatrun. Jitva means by defeating Shatrun, your enemies. Kill your enemies. That is your duty on the battlefield. How you can do your duty? By killing your enemies. Who are the enemies? Who are supporting a dharma. You are supporting dharma. Do your duty. Protect dharma. Kill your enemies. By killing your enemies, you will kill adharma. Right? So, and also become victorious. Yaso labhasva. Yaso labhasva means you will also gain fame. By killing your enemies, you will be doing your duty and at the same time you will get fame. And not only will you get fame, but by defeating your enemies, you will bhumshva rajam. Rajam means the kingdom. Bhumshva, you will get to enjoy, you will get back your kingdom. So many years you have suffered in the forest. How many years have you suffered in the forest? 13 years you have suffered in the forest. You have slept in the forest, you have suffered there. No AC, no bed, no servants to serve you. Now you will get back the comfort of your palace. Everything you will get back that originally belonged to you. So, look at it, it's a win-win situation. Kill your enemies, attack adharma, you will get fame, you will get back your kingdom also, you will get back everything. So now he says, know a very important thing. All these warriors, nihata. Nihata means they have already been killed. That means whether you decide to kill or not, they have already been killed. Nihata. By who? Maya eva. By me, Krishna says. I have already done the killing. When have you done the killing? Because they are still alive. They are on the battlefield. He says they have already been killed by me before already. What do you mean by they have been already killed by you before? The prarabdha karma has come to an end. Their file has got to be closed. So I have already done that. Right? So their means, now, I have already designated their death, but what is left now? What is the means of destruction? That they are to die has already been confirmed, but there has got to be a means of destruction. Right? How the destruction comes now? So the means has, the death has already been decided by Lord. I only need a, what we call an instrument to carry out my work. See, it's just like, you know, in a school play when you see the children, you know, in a school play. So they are given these little arrows made out of paper, right, on a cardboard or paper. So one child is told, you stand there, you are the good fellow, you shoot the arrow, and the other boy, he is the bad fellow. And the other fellow is told what? the arrow will come to you, but in case it doesn't hit you, what are you supposed to do? You fall down and die. That is your duty, you have to fall down. So whether the arrow hits you or not, you play like you are dead. So that is what he is telling Arjuna now. It does not matter whether your arrow hits the target or not, they are going to die anyway. You know, you shoot, don't shoot, whether your arrow hits the target, they know what to do, they are going to die anyway. Right? So the warriors have already been destroyed by me. Now comes the most beautiful line here. Savya Sachin Nimita Matram Bhava. A very beautiful line. Savya Sachin, addressing Arjuna as the left-handed archer. Savya Sachin means the one who can shoot the bow and arrow from the left hand. He could shoot from the right hand, he could also shoot from the left hand. Arjuna was such an accomplished archer that he could even in the night hear the sound and shoot the arrow in that direction and hit his target. Such a great archer he was. He was well known throughout Bharat as the greatest archer. Every battle he entered, he won every battle. So he says, Savya Sachin, you are left-handed archer. Nimita Matram Bhava. Bhava, may you be Nimita Matram, an instrument in my hands. Now, here when he calls him Savya Sachin, to be an instrument in my hands, meaning he is telling him, do not have any fear. What is the outcome of this battle? Do not have any fear that you are killing your guru, you are killing your beloved ones. You are only doing your duty, you are only being an instrument in my hands. And do not have any ego that you are fighting this war, you are killing. No, because I am doing all the killing. I have done all the killing. So don't have fear, don't have ego. Just be an instrument in my hands. Just like the bow and arrow also is an instrument in your hands. The bow and arrow has got no ego. The bow and arrow has got no fear. It just surrenders in your hands. Whatever you want to do, the bow and arrow is an instrument in your hands. In the same way, you also be an instrument in my hands also. So that should be the attitude of a devotee. Oh Lord, I am doing all my responsibilities. I am doing all my duties by being an instrument in your hands. So, in this battle, whoever dies, whoever lives, is not determined by Arjuna. Right? Now, surrendering as an instrument to the hands of the Lord means what? Nimita Matram Bhava. First of all, if we have this attitude, the ego in us is removed. We don't think we are doing anything. We are serving the Lord and we are serving His creation. The family is who? Is created by Lord. The world is created by who? Created by the Lord. When you are doing your duty, you are serving the Lord and His creation as an instrument in His hands. So the feeling of ego is automatically removed. Now, one thing we must be very clear, as what the brother asks, when we say we are an instrument in the hands of the Lord, means what? Everything has been predetermined by the Lord, isn't it? Because he's telling him, the soldiers have already been killed. So, what does he tell us? It looks like we human beings have got no choice in life. Right? We have no choice in life. Everything in our life is predetermined. That's why they say it's all written on your palm, on your forehead, everything is written already. Therefore, how can I change my destiny? If everything is pre-written, how do I change my destiny then? And this is why fatalist people, they say, everything is determined by Bhagavan, what can I do? You know, it's like this only in my life, you know, nothing I can do, I'm born like that, I'll die like that only. That is what? Fatalist attitude. Right? Bhagavan determines and does everything, we cannot do everything. Anything at all. But now, if we read this verse, it looks like we are a puppet in the hands of Lord. Now, when we say we are a puppet in the hands of Lord, which means what? We accept we have no free will. Right? So, what is the difference? One is faith, right? Faith which is written by God. And one is attitude of fatalism. What is the difference between faith and fatalism? Faith is we accept that everything is written by God. Fatalism is accepting that I cannot change anything at all. Now, where did this faith come from? F-A-T-E, faith. From our past actions. Did we have freedom in our past actions? Yes, we had. Therefore, in our tradition, see, faith, we must understand, how is faith indicated in our lives? By our horoscope, right? When you read your horoscope, or the person who reads your horoscope, how does he determine what is your faith? From the planetary positions. Now, one very important thing we have to understand. It is not the planetary positions that dictate your faith. We wrongly think that the planets influence our lives. But what is it actually? It's our prarabdha which influence our lives. By reading the planets, we know what is the prarabdha. So it is not the planets influencing your life. It is your prarabdha that influences your life. By reading the planets, we can know how your prarabdha is influencing you. Now, the example is this. When you have a fuel meter in your car, the fuel meter in the car does not influence how much petrol you have. How much petrol you have in the tank is influenced by what? How you drive, isn't it? How you drive will determine how much petrol you have. What does the fuel meter only tell you? How much petrol you have in your tank. It does not determine how much fuel is, how the fuel is burnt in your tank. Similarly, the planetary positions tell us our prarabdha. They do not influence, prarabdha influences. Okay, now, if we say faith alone determines everything, we call it fatalism. That means I say only faith is there, so we call it fatalism. But scriptures also tell us that there is another factor that influences your life, which is called free will. Now, if you only accept, let's say there are two factors now influencing our lives, fatalism and free will. If you only accept that faith influences your life, what is the problem? We must understand this, because if we say only faith determines our life, what is the biggest problem? There is an advantage, okay. First I tell you the good news first. What is the advantage? If you say only faith influences your life.
You don't have to make any effort to know the future.
You don't have to take any responsibility for your action, isn't it? Whether you do wrong, you say this is God's will. I rob you is God's will. I steal from you is God's will. Right? I don't take any responsibility for my action. So now, what is the problem with if we do not accept free will? If we say that everything is determined by faith, one of the biggest problems is then God becomes the karta. He becomes a doer. We say he is the doer. He is doing everything. So, do you know what happens when you make God the doer? Yaha karta bhavati sa eva bhokta bhavati. The one who does the actions suffers the results. So if you say God is the doer, then who gets all the punyam and papam? God gets the punyam and papam. So we don't get the punyam and papam. And God does not only get punyam and papam for one person, but for everybody's punyam and papam. Right? So that means now who has to take repeated births? I don't have to take repeated births. God has to take repeated births. Why? Because God is the doer. The punyam and papam all go to him. So you can understand the fatalistic thinking, we must be very clear. Definitely God is not the doer. God is not the doer. Second, if we are not the doers, we are only an instrument. Now supposing the murderer takes a knife and murders, who gets the papam, the instrument or the murderer? So if we are an instrument, we should not get punished, which is not correct to do. Thirdly, we have to ask then, if God is the doer, how does he decide who to punish and who to reward? Right? that means there is no system. I just decide whoever I want to punish, whoever I want to reward, if we say God is the doer. So therefore, we have to be very careful when we say God is the doer of everything. We cannot make him the karta. And since we are the instruments, we cannot decide in our lives what to do, because God decides everything. So, who needs to know about dharma and adharma? Who needs to study the scriptures? God, no, I don't have to study the scriptures. I don't have to know about dharma. Why? I am only an instrument in his hands. Right? So, we can see that if we just say we don't have free will, then all the time we put the dosha, we put the blame on God. And that means it tells us what? In fact, we should not have any conflicts in life. Because I will only have conflict when I cannot decide what to do, A or B. But if I say everything God decides, means there is no conflict in my life. Everything is decided by God. So now, what is the right attitude therefore? Does fate play a role in our lives?
Yes.
Does free will play a role in our lives?
Yes.
So what is the right attitude? Accept both, that faith also plays a role in my life and free will also plays a role in my life. We cannot reject either one. We cannot say only free will is there, faith is not there. We cannot say only faith is there, free will is not there. Accept that both also play a role in my life. So now the question comes, why did Krishna say, be an instrument in my hand? When he says, be an instrument in my hand, means he's taking away the free will away from you already. Yet he makes the statement, nimitta matram bhava. Why did he make the statement then?
You have a choice to do the right thing or not to do the right thing.
You have a choice to follow dharma. That means you have a choice to use your free will to follow dharma. When you make a choice to use your free will to follow dharma, it is being an instrument in the hands of the Lord. When you base your life on raga dvesha and you don't follow dharma, then you don't become an instrument in the hands of the Lord. So when Krishna is telling Arjuna, may you be an instrument in my hands, meaning you have a choice now to decide to do your duty as a soldier, to follow your dharma, then you become an instrument in my hands.
What about a policeman or the police force?
Right.
The cops, they've been asked to control demonstrators.
Right.
Poor people who are demanding food, let's say.
Right.
So they are poor, they are victims.
They
are victims.
Victims, okay.
But they've been ordered to fire.
Fire at them, yeah.
To kill them.
Right.
So
if they are now
soldiers,
which means they are taking the orders from who?
From
the authorities. So you have a choice now. If you take the order from authorities and fire at the demonstrators, do you incur sin?
No.
There's no papa. Because you have taken the order as a soldier. Or either you walk away from the battlefield. You don't want to be a soldier. Because you don't want to take that orders from the authorities. So you have to decide what role you are going to play. Whether are you going to be a soldier, then you will take your, then do your duty as a soldier.
If a terrorist is following the orders of IS,
if a terrorist is doing the following the orders of what you call
Okay.
I will take. I'll show you one verse here, Gita.
But even the government can be
go to chapter 18, verse 32. Page 318. Chapter 18, verse 32, page 318. What is that understanding using that intellect which is enveloped in darkness, wrongly accepts adharma as dharma and regards all things as contrary? What type of intellect is this? Tamasic by nature. So everything which is right I consider wrong, everything which is wrong I consider right. That is a tamasic type of thinking. Terrorist thinking is not a sattvic thinking. Right? So we must understand this also very clearly, that if you take orders under delusion, not knowing, like brainwash, it's basically being brainwashed. What is wrong, you say right. What is right, you say wrong. You're totally brainwashed. Acting under that is tamasic. Okay, so that means we understand now what is being an instrument in the hands of the Lord. Yes. If you make a choice to stay as a soldier, that means with clear understanding that I'm doing my duty, right? Not under delusion, that I am under orders, I carry out my duty. Okay, then?
When that means you don't keep any power because you carry out.
Correct, correct.
And if the other choice is then you choose to abandon, then you don't want to be a policeman.
You don't be a soldier, don't be a policeman, yeah. No, that's why it depends. You see, if you want to do, you take your orders. But if you are not going to do it, then better you leave. That's the dilemma of Arjuna now. See, because he was told to be on the battlefield and fight. If you don't want to fight, then better you leave. But when you leave, you be prepared also to face the consequences also. Because you have abandoned your duty. So you also be prepared to face the consequences. Right? If you can't take the consequences, then abandon your duty. But understand that clearly. Okay, so now, what is being an instrument in the hands of the Lord? Using my free will to follow dharma, I become an instrument in the hands of the Lord. If I use my free will and follow raga dvesha, likes and dislikes, then I am not an instrument in the hands of the Lord. So exercise your free will, that is what he is telling Arjuna. You make a choice now. You do your duty, follow your dharma, then you become an instrument in my hands. So now, we go to verse number 34. He says now, Dronam, Bhishma, Jayadratha, Karna. He names these four warriors. All these warriors, and there is another on the second line, you see, Anyan Api. Anyan Api means Anyan Api Yodha Viran, all the other warriors, not only these four warriors, but Anyan Api Yodha Viran, all the other warriors on both sides of the army, Mayahatams, they have already been killed by me. So, what is telling Arjuna? Therefore, Arjuna, Tvam Jahi, may you destroy all these warriors. May you do your duty and you will not incur any papam. Right? Because in the earlier chapter also, if we go back again to chapter 1, verse 36, Arjuna had this fear that by killing he was going to incur papam. So in chapter 1, verse 36, he told Krishna, it's on page 17. Page 17. He had this fear that by killing his gurus, killing his relatives, he says, what joy can we derive by slaying the sons of Dhritarashtra? Sin alone will accrue to us by killing these felons. Now, look at the conflict in Arjuna's mind. What does he call these people? Felons. What are felons? The Sanskrit word is Atatayins. Atatayins are said to be in our scriptures, they have broken six rules. Anybody who breaks these six rules, a Kshatriya has got to kill that person. So what are the six rules? One is somebody who abducts another person's wife. One who takes away somebody's land. One who kills another person who is defenseless, has no weapon. You have a weapon, you go and kill that person. So all that is like other times. It means the greatest crimes they've committed. Taking away somebody's land, burning down somebody's house. All these the Kauravas had done in the Mahabharata. We read all the great crimes they've done. So they were called other times. And the scriptures say that anyone who is an Atatayin, it is the duty of the Kshatriya to kill that person. And the Kshatriya will not incur any sin. So Arjuna here is calling them Atatayins. He knows that they have committed all these sins. But, and he knows he is a soldier, he is supposed to protect and uphold Dharma. Yet he says, by killing them, I will incur sin. So here, Krishna wants to assure him that you are not committing any sin at all. So, he says, arise and kill all these warriors. Dronam, Bhishma, Jayadratan, Karma, Karna. So, see the type of warriors also is naming. Drona is somebody Arjuna didn't want to kill. Right? Bhishma is somebody also he didn't want to kill. Karna, he was ready to kill anytime. And who is Jayadratha? Jayadratha was the king of Sindhu. And he was married to Dushala. Dushala was the only daughter of the blind king Dhritarashtra. He had 100 sons and only one daughter. Now the story goes that before Jayadratha's father gave up the kingdom, he received a prophecy that his son is going to be killed. So what the father did, he went to an ashram, gave up the throne, and he did severe tapas. And when God came, he said, give me that protection for my son, that anybody cuts his head, the person who kills my son, he himself will blow up into 1,000 pieces. So God said, okay, tatastu, may it be so. So what happened now on the battlefield? Arjuna used the weapon that slashed Jayadratha's head. But before the head could fall to the ground, the weapon took the head all the way to where Jayadratha's father was sitting down in meditation. And the head fell in the lap of the father. So the father got shocked, he woke up and the head fell to the ground. So who got blown up into pieces? The father himself. Right? So all these people like Jayadratha and Karna, Arjuna wanted to kill. But Bhishma, Drona, he didn't want to kill. But what Lord is telling him, don't see any difference in them. They are all the same. Why? They are all on the side of Adharma. So it doesn't matter whether it is Drona, whether it is Bhishma, whoever it is, you have to kill them. Why? Because they all represent Adharma. Right? So he says now, you should not entertain any fear or sin of killing them. All these warriors, Anya Yodha Viran, all these warriors, which some of them is mentioned, knowing this, may you fight, Yujyasva. May you take to battle. And certainly, he assures him now, he gives him the greatest assurance. Certainly, you will jetasi, you will defeat who? Sapatnam, all your enemies. So he guarantees him, don't worry, don't have any fear about papam, don't have any fear about death. Go ahead and fight. You will definitely defeat all your enemies, Rane, in this battle. So now, Krishna has addressed Arjuna's fear of fighting, that you will not incur any sin. He even told Arjuna what is the outcome of the war, that you will be successful, you will be victorious. Now, Sanjaya wants to describe what is the feeling now that Arjuna is going through. So what was the first feeling? What was the first emotion? Wonderment. Wonderment went off, then came fear. Now fear also is gone off. Now comes the third emotion, which is surrender, saranagati. So here now, Sanjaya takes over. He wants to describe now what is Arjuna going through now. And how does he describe it? He says, he calls Arjuna by the name of Kirti. The word Kirti is used here. In the second line you can see the word Kirti. Kirti means the one who wears the diadem. Diadem is a crown which has got jewels in it. And only those people who are of royalty, they are allowed to wear this diadem. So it signifies that Arjuna is somebody of great standing. So he addresses him as Kirti, sovereignty. It's a symbol of sovereignty. So what happened to Arjuna? Srutva vachanam. Srutva means having heard. Vachanam, the words of Krishna, meaning now Arjuna clearly understood that Lord is also compassionate, Lord is also kind, but at the same time there is also the destructive nature of Lord. When the prarabdha karma is over, Lord has to activate the destructive nature. So all this Arjuna has understood very clearly, that it is not God who is kind or cruel, it is our own karmas that rewards or punishes according to the law of karma. So understanding that now, what is Arjuna's emotion? He is describing this. Vepamana. He is still trembling a bit because that fear slowly is coming down. He is still trembling. But what does he do? Namaskritva. He salutes to Krishna. Not only does he salute, how does he salute? Kritanjalir. What is Kritanjalir? You remember? Anjali Mudra. That is bringing the left and the right hands together, which I told you, what is the significance? The left and the right side of the mind merging together, meaning the emotional and the intellectual mind coming together. So very wonderful mudra to use to just cool or calm our agitated mind. That's why before we pray, we put our hands together to make our mind cool and not to, basically when you are agitated, we cool down the mind. So before we concentrate on the Lord. So Anjali Mudra, Kritanjalir. And there are three ways you can do this. What are the three ways? One is we hold it here, right? Why do we hold it here? Connect with the heart, which is which? Chakra. Anahata Chakra. So either you can connect it to the heart, which is the Anahata Chakra, or we hold it here, which means you connect to the Ajna Chakra, or you hold it, which means Sahasra Chakra. So don't hold it down here, because which means what? All the worldly chakras you're connecting to. So that's why there are three places. Here is the heart, and in between the eyebrows and the head. That is the three. We are connecting that emotional and the intellectual mind to the chakras. Okay? So that's very important to know. Yes?
Out of the three ways, the most effective mode of placing your palms, because I think across one massage is that the most difficult one is between your
eyebrows. You can choose either three. You can choose either three. It depends what level of your own consciousness you are. You choose either three. Of course, the highest is this. But that doesn't mean that if we do that, immediately we are going to get moksha. It just means that we want to raise our level of consciousness to this level. Okay? Sorry? Comes back to the level of your mind, yeah. You can put it anywhere you want. That slowly raise your level of consciousness. You will know how, because earlier I described to you, and what will be your response, that way you know where is your level of consciousness. Okay? Yeah. So he does this pranam to Lord Krishna, and not only once he does pranam, but bhuya eva. Again and again he does his pranams. Repeatedly he does namaskar, and not only he does namaskar, what else? Pranamya. Pranamya means he bows down. So not only doing this, but also he bows down. Pranamya. Why does he do all this repeatedly? repeatedly doing namaskar, repeatedly bowing down, repeatedly doing namaskar, repeatedly. Why? Because now he has realized the glory of the person standing right in front of him. And that emotions of devotion are just pouring out of him. He can't control himself. So he's reached that level. And this is not through Krishna's blessings. This is his own realization that he's coming to now. So pranandya. And still there is a bit of fear in him. So how do we know? He says, sagat gadam. He speaks with a choking voice. His voice is still choking. Partly with fear, partly with emotion and love. Bita bita, he has that spear also in him. Okay? So with a choking voice, he, with a trembling heart, now he addresses Krishna. From the next verse 36. And these verses from 36 up to verse number 44, these are called prayer verses. They are very important, significant verses. They are very beautiful verses. These verses we use in the ashram every day in the evening when we do aarti. We recite these verses. So they are total prayer verses which are surrendered to the Lord. Very beautiful verses. If you just go through the meanings, they are very beautiful prayer verses which we tell the Lord we are surrendering totally to you. 36 to 44. Okay. So Arjuna will start now the third emotional response that he's going through, and that is saranagati, surrender to the Lord. So when we come back next week, we will look at these verses. We have a few minutes left. Any questions? Yes. Right.
Where does the grace come in?
Okay. Now, when we talk about the grace of the Lord, you see, the thing is, he says that also in various chapters, no matter what we do, okay, all the sadhanas that we do, we will never attain moksha until we get the grace of the Lord. So the final aspect we have to wait for is the grace of the Lord. That's why when we reach that highest level, you know what is the highest level? Not moksha, before you reach moksha. What is the highest level of a devotee? He does not ask for anything already. He leaves everything in the hands of the Lord. He does not even ask for moksha, because he knows that also is in the hands of the Lord. So when we have reached that level where we just say, "Oh Lord, it is in your hands, whatever you decide for me, I accept." At that point, when you totally surrender, that's when we get the grace of the Lord. So the grace of the Lord is the ultimate. It only comes when we can totally surrender to the Lord. Not by how much amount of study, he says later, no much how much amount of study you do, how much amount of tapas you do, how much amount of charity you do, until you don't have this total surrender, you will never get the grace of the Lord. That's why Arjuna could not reach up to that Sahasra Chakra. He could only reach up to that Agnya Chakra. Any other questions? Okay, no questions. We end with a prayer.
Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru.
Hari Om. Thanks to all.